Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. There were lines overnight outside of the U.S. Supreme Court ahead of today's arguments on discrimination in the workplace for gay Americans. The cases are part of a fall docket that includes controversial issues like gun control and abortion, which means new questions about how politicized the court has become. Public perception of the court is something that Chief Justice John Roberts is really concerned about, and we're going to talk about that today. As our guest joins us, I'd like to hear from you. Do you believe the court is irreparably politicized? Is there a specific decision that you can point to that either supports your thoughts about politicization or says to you, no, I still trust in the objectivity of the court? Here's the phone number, 651-227-6000 on how you perceive the U.S. Supreme Court, 800-242-2828, whether you believe it has become too politicized, on Twitter, at CarrieNPR. Lawrence Baum is with us. He's a political scientist at Ohio State University and the co-author of a book titled The Company They Keep, How Partisan Divisions Came to the Supreme Court. He joins us from Columbus, Ohio. And Larry, I understand you are a professor emeritus, so welcome. It's really good to have you on the show.
Well, it's very good to be with you.
Chief Roberts has openly worried about how the court is seen. Does he have reason to worry?
That's a very difficult question to answer. I think in a concrete sense, people's views of the court, whether they like it or dislike it, may not make a great deal of difference, but the justices want to be thought well of. And Chief Justice Roberts is the most visible person on the court, as the person regarded as being the head of the court. He doesn't want people to see the court as being essentially a political partisan body. In that sense, he does have something to worry about.
I'm a little surprised to hear you say Americans' opinions of the court may not make that much of a difference, because as an institution, yet another institution where we have diminishing confidence and faith in it, isn't that a problem?
Well, it may or may not be. And as you picked up, my own view is that it's not a big problem for the court. It remains the most popular of the three branches of government. There is more trust in the court than there is in either Congress or the president. And although certainly people get very unhappy about things that the court does, their perception of it as a respected body is relatively resilient.
Hmm.
This isn't to say that something might not happen. It's possible that as the perspectives on the court have changed, that eventually the court's positive image will erode. I just don't think it's a highly serious problem in a concrete sense. As I say, it may be a problem in the sense that the justices don't want to be thought of as political and partisan. And in that sense, they do have something to worry about.
Mike called to say he thought that Citizens United was a turning point on the court. He says, to me, that was the evidence that the court became too politicized. That was a case that basically said corporations have the rights that individuals enjoy when it comes to campaign financing. And it was called out by many Democrats. Can you see why some Americans would see that as an inflection point in trust in the court?
Well, certainly that's right. And the fact that the division was ideological, it wasn't partisan, but it was a division between liberals and conservatives, did give some people the feeling that the court was acting on a political basis. So for many people, that was a real inflection point. For other people, typically on the other side of the political spectrum, it came much earlier with Roe versus Wade. And other people would look at one decision or another. But one thing that does happen is the court, actually for several decades, has leaned conservative, but also has issued a number of liberal decisions. And in a way, that's probably helped to protect the court in terms of public perceptions. People get angry at one decision, then they find something else that they like. Mm. If you think of the two major decisions at the end of the term last June, conservatives were very unhappy about the court's ruling on including a citizenship question in the census.
Right.
Liberals were unhappy about the decision saying that the federal courts wouldn't touch gerrymandering. And so, in a sense, the court came out even in public perceptions. Now, should the court take a more concerted conservative path, there are going to be some people who are more consistently unhappy, and that certainly may have an effect on the court.
Yeah, Anne called from Polk County to say one word, gerrymandering, and that was just last term, and it's hugely political. Larry, I'm thinking about the decision on Obamacare, where Chief Justice Roberts ended up being the swing vote on that, and he made conservatives and many Republicans really angry about his decision there. As we look back on that, I wonder if he was doing some of the balancing that you've observed and you're talking about.
Well, that's a very good point, and you could make the same point about his decisive vote in the census case last June.
Yes, right.
Where in both instances, some people suspect he changed his position in order to try to protect the court from criticism. The Chief Justice, being in the ideological middle of the court, as he is now, but also being the Chief Justice, he may have a kind of unique concern about the image of the court. This isn't going to affect a very large percentage of what he does, but from time to time, there may be decisions in which he takes that into account. And certainly those are the two decisions that stick out in that respect.
As the U.S. Supreme Court takes up a pretty controversial docket this session, today they're hearing arguments on workplace discrimination. They've got cases that involve gun control and abortion. We're talking with Larry Baum from Ohio State and the co-author of a book called The Company They Keep, How Partisan Divisions Came to the Supreme Court. We're talking to him about the view that many Americans have of the objectivity or the fairness of the U.S. Supreme Court. And I'm asking you this morning whether you believe the court is irreparably politicized. Is there a specific decision, a specific case that you can point to that either supports that or rebuts that idea? 651-227-6000 on the politics of the U.S. Supreme Court, whether it's irreparably politicized, 800-242-2828 on a specific decision that you're thinking about, and on Twitter at CarrieNPR. Larry, I went back to read your piece that you wrote during the Kavanaugh confirmation fight, which I think did a lot to shape the opinion of some Americans on the fairness of the court. And you said that there could be a silver lining for Democrats if Kavanaugh was confirmed. He was. Has the silver lining materialized?
I think we don't know yet. When we were talking about the silver lining, it was about just what you have raised, which is Chief Justice Roberts and his role and his concern about maintaining some ideological balance on the court to protect the court's image. In the first term of Justice Kavanaugh's tenure on the court, both Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Kavanaugh, and for that matter, Justice Gorsuch, were more moderate than most people had expected. Now, all of them leaned strongly in a conservative direction, but there were a number of deviations from that conservatism. On the other hand, the court had a docket last year in which there were few really consequential cases. The gerrymandering case, the census case were exceptions to a relatively, I suppose we could say, dull year.
Mm-hmm.
As you pointed out, this year is different. In this term, the court's going to hear a bunch of major cases. And we're going to learn a lot more about Chief Justice Roberts, as well as Justice Kavanaugh and Justice Gorsuch, when we see how they respond to those major cases.
This is
really the year where we're going to find out much more about what the current court is like.
Here's the other thing that I'm curious about, given the specifics of the docket. Are we a country where Washington is really so paralyzed in coming up with solutions or some kind of legislation for some of these really controversial issues like gun control, so that more and more of these issues are being funneled into the judiciary and ultimately, in some cases, to the court? Is that different from, you know, in other decades?
Actually, I don't think that that's changed a great deal. What has changed is a greater willingness on the part of people in the other branch of government to go to court to challenge actions that they don't like. So we have more and more lawsuits coming from state governments, and for that matter, from Congress and from the president, challenging actions of the other branch. And that has meant that a court which has always heard big cases gets a few more, because, in effect, it's being asked to referee battles within government.
But you're saying it really has nothing to do with the fact that Congress is not making laws to immigration. Great example, right? Congress paralyzed for years on immigration. So a lot of these individual decisions from the president or in specific states are ending up in courts. But you're saying that's not that unusual.
No, that part of it, you're right. That is part of the change. President Obama and even more President Trump have used their executive powers to adopt policies that they can't get Congress to adopt. And that is something of a change. And you're absolutely right. That's one thing that has made a difference.
Somebody just tweeted an article that actually inspired this conversation. It was in the Times. It was an op-ed. And it's by this group called Take Back the Court. You're probably familiar with them, Larry. They want to expand the size of the court. They're a liberal group. Yeah. So their thesis in this op-ed that I think appeared yesterday in the Times says that Chief Justice John Roberts is as partisan as they come. Don't be fooled, basically, by the things that he says. And here's what they say. Our analysis shows that the Chief Justice's voting record is as conservative as those of his most extreme current and former colleagues, Thomas, Alito, Kavanaugh, and Scalia. In all 42 split decision cases that the Chief Justice has presided over involving racial minorities, immigrants, workers, and abortion, he voted for conservative outcomes 100% of the time. So there's an organization that's saying, you know, Roberts might be worrying about this openly, but when he's actually voting, it shows us something else.
Well, this goes back to something I mentioned a little earlier, which is that Roberts certainly is strongly conservative, and that is reflected in his votes on most issues. So if this group is saying, in effect, don't be fooled by the few instances in which he takes what are generally regarded as liberal positions. Mm-hmm. There's some validity to that. But the fact is, last term, there was a real difference between Justice Alito and Justice Thomas on the one hand, and Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Gorsuch, and Justice Kavanaugh on the other hand. They all had clearly conservative records, but Alito and Thomas were distinctly more conservative than the other three.
Call here from
now, that certainly is not going to satisfy a liberal group because it's still a strong conservative leaning.
That's right.
But there's a difference there.
Call here from Mark in northern Minnesota. Hi, Mark. What are you thinking about this?
Well, I have a point is that the magnitude of the decisions are just as important as the decisions themselves. A good example is the Citizens United case. Citizens United affected every American, and it disconnected the link in between the voter and our representatives due to an influx of money, and that corrupted the system. And if you quote-unquote balance decisions by saying, okay, well, they backed Obamacare decision, there's 25, that's going to affect what, 25 to 42 million people without insurance.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see what you're saying is the scale of the consequent, right, of the decision. Larry, what do you think about that idea?
Well, again, I think that's a very good point. that if we simply count up votes and count up decisions, we're not taking into account their importance. So in the case of Chief Justice Roberts, we have two quite important decisions in which he took what would be considered liberal decisions, positions. But then there's a bunch of other major decisions in which he has followed a conservative line, and the importance does have to be taken into account. That's a very good point.
Larry, what do you think of the idea of expanding the court, which is what this group we've been talking about wants to do? More members of the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, first of all, Congress has the power to do it. And up until the 1860s, Congress did it several times. They either added members or they took seats away. But we have had a 9-member court for so long that now I think it's almost quasi-constitutional and would be regarded as illegitimate to expand it. President Franklin Roosevelt discovered that in the 1930s when he wanted to expand the court. So first of all, you would have to have Democratic control of both houses and the presidency for this even to have any consideration at all. And secondly, I suspect even under those circumstances, enough people regard that as an illegitimate step that it just couldn't get enacted.
Oh. Larry, a pleasure to talk to you this morning. Thanks so much for the insight. Hope we talk again.
Well, thank you.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.